Thank you for downloading this podcast. We hope you enjoy the following message from Gateway Family Church.
We are doing a series right now called Papa's Gumbo, and the point of this series is coming from the fact that when I was a kid, my grandfather's a Cajun, and whenever I would go to his house, he would cook gumbo, and every time I went to his house to eat gumbo, it was always different. And so there was never one time when he had the same thing in there. So it was like whatever meat, whatever vegetables, whatever stuff he had available, he would throw it in there. And it was funny how it always came together and was very tasty and was wonderful and my favorite meal. And so we started thinking about how in our country, in our nation, in our world today, how God has created us all so different, and we've got to learn how to come together, right, to make something beautiful like the gumbo. And so one of the problems that we have today in our country is division. I mean, we are divided along racial lines. We are divided along political lines. We're divided between the north and the south, the east and the west. Like, everybody's got some kind of level of division. And we said last week how that's really a plan of Satan. The Bible says that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so we have to learn how to bring unity and bring everybody back together. And so last week we did a whole message about coming back together. So today we want to talk about something else that I believe causes a lot of division, and that is being offended. How many of y'all have ever been offended before? Okay, that should be every hand should go up. Every one of us has been offended, and most of the time we get offended about the dumbest stuff. Right? Like the other day I was reading the news, and I was reading sports news, and there's this basketball player. He's an African-American basketball player, and he's got tattoos all up and down his arms, and he was so offended that a Chinese-American basketball player had dreadlocks, and he was offended. And then they showed pictures of his tattoos, and they were all Chinese letters. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. You can't be offended at somebody. If you're doing the same thing they're doing, it doesn't make any sense. We get offended about the smallest stuff. Yesterday, we were watching LSU and Auburn, and I'm a huge LSU fan, and my wife is an Auburn fan, and I had to be very careful not to be offensive, right? Like, if I'm watching LSU and Alabama, I can be as offensive as I want to be, but not Auburn, because I've got to sleep with her every night, and so I got to be very careful. And so last night, Auburn would score, and I would just, you know, I'd be upset or whatever, and then LSU started scoring and coming back, and I would just say, well, it's not over yet, you know, I mean, Auburn can still come back, and on the inside, I'm thinking, LSU's going to kill you, you know, but well, on the outside, I'm just like, it's not over yet, babe, it's okay, you can still, you know, your team's okay, and so you got to be very careful not to be offensive, and nowadays, it's just everybody's so sensitive about everything, and it's like, no matter what you say or what you do, somebody is going to get offended. And as a matter of fact, I want to show you a video today to teach you how to be offended. So I want you to watch this real quick.
I've been having life-changing results since I learned how to get offended. Now, when people don't see things the way that I see them, I just get offended. And it teaches them how not to see things from their point of view. I'm offended that you would think you have the right to post that to your Facebook account. People have every right to see things from their perspective, as long as their perspective is the same as my perspective.
Here's a water for you.
I don't drink out of plastic. Why would you not know that?
People who don't get offended are insecure, take no self-responsibility, and have no sense of purpose in life. I pray for them.
JP, I don't even know why you're offended.
I'm offended that you don't know how you offended me.
JP, I wanted to thank you and show my gift of appreciation by giving you my book, because I know you need it, right?
You're just assuming that I know how to read?
There's three easy steps to getting offended by anything. Step one, listen to what someone says. And then selflessly make it all about you by taking it personally, even if it has nothing to do with you.
I really want you to have a great life.
You're assuming my life isn't good enough the way it is? How dare you?
Step two, you want to create a large amount of tension inside your body. You really want to concentrate on bringing the tension to your stomach, your chest, and your face.
How are you doing today, JP?
I'm offended that you would have to ask. Step three, now project outrage onto the other person. This will make it seem like you're getting rid of the tension inside your body, but it actually drives it down deeper inside you. And because it stays there, it'll make it even easier for you to get offended next time. I'm offended that you would wear that shirt.
I'm actually a little offended by that.
I'm offended that you're offended by that. Since I've learned how to get offended, I bring huge amounts of joy to everyone in my life. People feel like they're free to just be themselves when they're around me. I'm just happy I can make such a big difference in the world.
I think she's a pretty attractive woman.
I'm offended that you would think I'm attracted to women.
Aren't you attracted to women?
Yeah, but you have no right to just assume that. I'm offended that you don't have my new book yet.
In all kinds of different shapes and sizes, and I think it's funny sometimes how we get so offended by the dumbest things. But what happens when we get offended by real things? You know, like, it's easy to laugh and make jokes about being offended by silly stuff, but whenever it's something serious, whenever it's something that really affects you, now that's really an issue that we have to deal with. And so today I want to just talk about a couple of areas of offense. And I wrote down a couple of things here. The fact that we get offended by things in our past. A lot of times we take so much offense and we hold on to it by things that happened long ago. We even get offended by things that didn't even happen to us necessarily. We get offended by things way in the past. And we hold on to these offenses. I've heard of people tell me before how they were holding on to this grudge. They were holding on to this issue that didn't happen to them. It happened not to their parents, but it happened to their grandparents. Something happened to their grandparents, but they have held on to this issue that happened to someone else, and they took offense to it, and now they didn't like this other family, or they didn't like this city or this area because of something that happened years ago to someone not related to them. I mean, not even in their own circle. Sometimes we get offended by perception, right? It's not even real. We get offended by what we think might be happening. I hate the fact that every time my in-laws come to church, I just happen to have an illustration about them in my notes. So that's never good, you know. And I thought about cutting this illustration and just saving it to second service when they're not here, but it's like a really vital part of my message, so I got to share it. But whenever Perry and I first got married, I had a real complex about being the man of the house. And I was young. We got married fairly young, and so I had this complex about being the man of the house. My dad was a very strong male role model in our home. And so I had this weird issue. So every time Perry wanted to make a decision, I would get upset. No, I should make all the decisions, and I should do this, and I should do that. And I remember when we first got married, and we were living in Mobile, and her parents would come visit, they would always buy groceries. And they would just fill our refrigerator up with groceries. And I remember the first time they did it, I got so offended. I didn't tell anybody because it's stupid. But I got offended. And I thought, why would they buy us groceries? Like, do they not think I can't provide for my family? Like, I am the man of this house. I make $30,000 a year. I can provide. You know what I mean? Like, I was so pumped up by how wealthy I was and how I could provide for my home. And then the next thought hit me was, maybe they just don't like my food. They don't like anything in my house, so they got to bring their own food to my house, and this is offensive. You know, and I would get so offended at first until later I realized that I wasn't offended, I was stupid. And so I just had to make a mind shift there, and when it especially happened when I started having kids, and if you don't know this, if you don't have kids, let me just give you a secret. Kids drain your bank account and your life. I mean, both of them at the same time. You know, it's like money just leaves and then you get old really fast. I used to have hair and then I had kids and it all fell out. You know, it didn't even go great. It just left. And so it's kids just drain. And so then whenever I started having kids and I started having no money, and then I was like, hey, when can your parents come visit us again? Can they come down? I'm really hungry, you know, and I would love for your mom and dad to show up. Even if they just stop by and leave, I don't care as long as they bring groceries. That's what matters. So we have this perception, right? They weren't being offensive. They were being kind, But because of my own personal issue, I perceived what they were doing as offensive, even though what they were doing was actually being a blessing. Sometimes we can take the things that are meant to be a blessing to us and turn it into an offense. And then we can't be blessed by that blessing. The other thing we get offended by is people. We're always offended by people. We're always, Perry is not necessarily always easily offended, but one of the things Perry does is during football season, there was one year when she would get on Facebook during football season, and she would get so angry. And it was because she's a big Auburn fan, and these Alabama fans would start posting stuff about Auburn, and they would go back, and she would say, I'm going to get on there, and I'm going to post it. I'm going to say some terrible things. I'm like, baby, you need to put your phone down. Like, you need to get off Facebook, because you're going to get yourself in trouble. You're about to sin because you're offended by these people. I started going to a workout class on Wednesdays. It's my lunch break. I go to this workout class. And in our family, Perry is always the most competitive, especially when it comes to sports. She's a very competitive person, or card games or dominoes or anything in life, going up and down the stairs. Like, she's a very competitive person. And my oldest son, Gabriel, has gotten that from her, so he's super competitive. Just, they're both very annoying people. And so I have always been the one that's not as competitive. I love sports. I love to play games, but I'm just not, I don't get that much into it. And then I realized when I went to this workout class, and I'm in the middle of this workout class, and I see this guy that I perceive is not as fit as I am. I know that sounds prideful, and it is. But I perceive he's not as fit as I am, and he was beating me in this workout class. Like, he was finishing before me, and I started watching this dude, and I noticed that he wasn't doing the workout right. And I got mad. I mean, I got really, really mad. And I just thought, next time I come to this class, I'm going to beat that dude. Like, I don't care what it takes, I'm going to beat him. And so the next time I come to the class, like, I look over and I position myself perfectly where I could watch him the whole time we're working out. And so we're working out and I'm looking at him and he is skipping reps. And I'm like, you do not skip reps. You know, and I thought, I'm going to do everything right and still beat you. And he's doing it all wrong. And he finally gets down to the jump ropes. And I thought, I'm going to kill him on the jump ropes because I can jump. And so I was like, I take off running. And I get on the jump rope. And I'm watching him. And I'm jumping. You know, and it's like 100 jump ropes. Like, how many times can I, how fast can I do this? And I'm like, I did 100 jump ropes unbroken. I've never done 100 unbroken before. And I did it unbroken. And I beat him. And I saw he's still doing jump ropes. I took my jumper and I threw it against the wall. And I was like, yeah. And then I thought, you look like an idiot. You're competing against somebody that doesn't even know it's a competition. He's just trying to get through his day, and you're so offended that he's cheating. We get offended by people. Sometimes we get offended by pain, and this is a real one. Like, people hurt us. Things hurt us. And we take that offense to heart, and we harbor it, and we hold it down inside. Sometimes we get offended by the perception of other people's pain. We get mad, especially nowadays. We get so mad about what we think other people are offended by, and they may not even be offended, but we take on their offense. There's a lot of stuff to get offended by. And today I want to talk about what happens when we start harboring this offense. So there's two things I believe that offense is. I told you last week, the plan of the enemy is to divide. He wants to divide your home. He wants to divide your church. He wants to divide your business. He wants to divide our country. His plan is to divide us. So how does he divide us? He divides us through offense, because the first thing offense is a wedge. Is a wedge. Now, many of you have seen a wedge before. If you've ever had to split logs before, you have one of those big log splitters, right? It's shaped like a wedge. And the point is, you hit the log hard enough, and it will go down, and it will split that log. Sometimes we use wedges to stop doors, right? We've got door stops out here on either side, and it's a little wedge, you stick it in there. Have you ever had one of those, something wedged underneath the door, and you didn't realize it, and you're trying to get through the door, and then you look like a dummy because you get the door open about that far, and you're just like banging on it? That happens in my kids' room sometimes. They get toys jammed under the door, and then I get upset, and I break the door. And so we get these wedges sometimes, and what the enemy does is he wants to take that wedge, and he wants to drive it into your heart. He wants to drive it into your family, drive it into your church, because he knows when there's a wedge that it begins a divide. And if he can divide you, he can win. The thing about a wedge is this. A wedge will keep you from doing the purpose God has designed you to do. I was talking to one of our leaders Wednesday night, and I was telling them about the message, and we were kind of going over it a little bit. And they were telling me, they said, you know, when I was at another church one time, I was offended by one thing. And they said, and I noticed that when I came to this church, I didn't want to do anything in church because I was still holding on to an offense from my past, an offense from another person. And it kept me from doing anything that I wanted to do. And they said, until God revealed the wedge that was in my life, and I had to remove that so that I could fulfill everything that God had for me. And so today I want to talk about how do we stop the wedge. And here's the thing. You don't just remove a wedge, you stop it from coming in the beginning. The Bible says this in Proverbs chapter 19, verse 11. It says, good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense. How do we overlook an offense? How do we get past being offended? Well, we have to first resist the wedge. We have to resist the wedge. Don't allow the wedge even to come in. You need to notice it, recognize it, and resist it. The Bible says this in James chapter 4, verse 7. It says, so humble yourselves before God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Notice it doesn't necessarily say attack the devil, right? It doesn't say run from the devil. It says resist. To resist means I'm going to stop you from even getting started. I'm going to block what you're trying to do. And what we need to pray today is we need to pray that God allows us to see the offense, the wedge, before it even gets to us so that we can resist it. So there's a couple of ways we can do that. We need to remember two things. Remember, number one, it's not you, it's me. This is something God said multiple times. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 6 and 7, let me just set it up real quick. In this story, Samuel is a prophet. He's been leading God's people for a while. The problem is God's people noticed that all the other countries had kings, and they said they wanted their own king. And Samuel gets offended because he thinks he's the leader, right? And so in verse 6 of 1 Samuel 8, he says this, but when they said, give us a king to lead us, this displeased Samuel or offended him. So he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord said to him, listen to all the people are saying to you. It's not you they have rejected, but they have rejected me as their king. A lot of times, when you get offended, you need to remember that it's not always you that people are rejecting. It's God that people are rejecting. There's times in your life you're trying to do the right thing, and you say, God, I'm trying to do right. I'm trying to do right in my home. I'm trying to do right in my business. I'm trying to do right. And people will get offended by you trying to do the right thing. They're not offending you. They're really offended at God. And so you need to remember that. In John chapter 15, verse 18, Jesus says, if the world hates you, remember that it hated me first. In other words, you need to remember God has been hated way more than you have. And you need to allow that to sink in so that the wedge doesn't get in. The other one is this. We need to learn to focus on what's good. I want to set up a little story for you this morning that I think is important here that I think we can all learn something from. So in the book of Luke, chapter 4, Jesus shows up, and the Bible says that he literally walks into the church, picks up the Old Testament, flips over to Isaiah, and opens it up and begins to read from the book of Isaiah, claiming what Isaiah said about himself for Jesus. So Jesus is saying, this prophecy Isaiah said is really all about me. And so I want you to look at a couple of things, if you would. Give me Luke chapter 14, verse 18. 4, verse 18. He says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free. Now, this is all really good stuff. Like, any of us would want this to be our calling. But I want you to look at the part I highlighted there. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the what? For the what? So Jesus is supposed to be setting prisoners free. I want you to look in Matthew chapter 11, verse 2. We're going to read about a guy named John the Baptist who happened to be Jesus' cousin. Here's what it says. Now when John heard in what? Prison Who is Jesus supposed to set free? Prisoners. What is John? He's in prison. He's a prisoner. When John heard in prison about the deeds of Christ, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who is to come? Or shall we go look for another?" Let me pause right there and just say, John is in prison. John was probably in church that day when Jesus showed up and said, "Hey, let me tell you all about myself. I'm here to set the prisoners free." And then John gets arrested for preaching the gospel. And while he's in prison, he's probably thinking, "You know what my cousin is? He's the guy that sets prisoners free. I'm going to be set free any minute now." And he's there for a day. And then he's there for 2 days. And then he's there for a week. And then he's there for a month. And he's thinking, "Yo, Jesus, you're not doing what you're called to do. Like, you're supposed to set the prisoners free, and I'm your cousin. Like, if you're going to set anybody free, it should be me. But I'm still in prison. And they're talking about cutting my head off. Like, I need you to come through on that promise." So he sends his boys to talk to Jesus and says, "Are you really the one? I don't think you're the one. Like, because if you were the one, you would have already set me free. So you're probably not the one. Should we start looking for somebody else?" And Jesus said in verse 4, "Go tell John what you hear and see, that the blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. And the dead are raised up, and the poor have the good news preached to them." Verse 6, this is important. "And blessed is the one who is not offended by me." Let me tell you what happens to us a lot of times. We get so focused on what God's not doing that we can't see what He is doing. We get so focused on what He's not doing that we can't see the good things He is doing. When it comes to people, we get so focused on what they're not doing that we never see the good things they are doing. See, your husband, he may sit around on Saturdays in his underwear and watch football all day, and you get offended by that because he's not up helping wash the dishes or take care of the kids or clean the house. And I'm not saying he shouldn't do all that stuff. But what you may not be seeing because you get so offended by what he's not doing is you may not be seeing how hard he works Monday through Friday. You may not see all the junk he has to go through at his job. You may not see all the stuff he does when no one's looking. See, there's a lot of stuff we don't see because we get so focused on the few things that aren't being done. We get mad at God. "God, you didn't come through for me. I paid my tithe and my car still broke down." But we didn't see all the stuff that God has done leading up to that point. And we can't see all the stuff He's going to do beyond that point. "Yeah, but God, I prayed and my grandma still died." You know what? I hate it when bad things happen. But the fact is, bad things always happen. We got to look at the good things God is doing around those bad things. Joseph, Will shared this morning that Joseph was put in prison, accused of rape. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong, and he's thrown into jail, and he could very easily say, "God, look at what you're not doing. You're not setting me free. You're not fulfilling your promises. You told me in a dream that I would be the head, that everybody would bow down to me, and look at me, I'm in prison." But God was setting up His purpose, but sometimes we got to go through hell to get to heaven. Does that make sense? And we got to stop looking at what's not being done and start focusing on what is being done. And when we learn to focus on what is being done, I have a feeling we're going to lose some of that offense and we're going to stop the wedge that the enemy wants to get into your heart. This happens a lot in marriage. I talk to married couples a lot. And this is a predominant issue in marriage is when one partner focuses on one aspect of marriage that is not being fulfilled. And instead of talking about it and dealing with it, they harbor it. They allow that to become a wedge between them and their spouse. And that's all they can think about. You know what it is? It's childish to think this way. If you've ever raised kids, you know, kids don't pay attention to all the stuff you do for them as a parent. Right? Like my kids will get mad sometimes if I don't get them something. And I think, you have a roof over your head. You have clothes on your body. You have food that your grandparents probably bought in your house. Don't get mad at me because you don't have the latest gadget or the latest toy or the nicest this Don't get offended at me because you don't have this when you do have all of this. But we do that as adults all the time. Well, I'm offended at these people. I'm offended at this politician because look at what they're not doing. I'm offended at our nation because look at what it's not doing. I'm offended at my boss because look at what he's not doing. Would you just take time to look at what is being done? It's so easy to find dirt, but it's hard to find gold. But the people that find gold are rewarded. Sometimes you have to dig a little bit. I share this all the time because I hate it. And I probably need to get off of Facebook, but I use Facebook to communicate with church people. But I hate getting on Facebook all the time because every single post, it feels like, is whatever negative is going on. And nobody takes the time to post the positive. Nobody takes the time to look for what good is happening. They only want to post the negative because that gets more clicks. We've got to learn to look for the good that's happening. I'm not saying we ignore it. I'm not saying we bury our head in the sand. No, that's not what I'm saying. Jesus said this, though. He said, don't get offended that I'm not setting you free. That's part of God's plan. You need to instead focus on the fact that people are getting preached to. The dead are being raised. Like, good things are happening, and you're just offended because something's not happening for you personally. But you don't see the big picture. Look at the big picture. The other thing that offense is, it's a wedge, but it's also a cycle. The fact is that offended people end up offending people. When you get offended, you go out and offend other people. And it becomes easy to do. Like that video shows, it becomes easy to do. Because once offense gets started, it's this vicious cycle that's hard to stop. So what we have to do is we have to learn to break the cycle. In 1 John chapter 3, John says. He says, but when people keep on sinning, it's a cycle. He's telling us that sin is a cycle. When people keep on sinning, it shows that they belong to the devil who has been sinning since the beginning. Let me just pause right here and just say this. When he says that you belong to the devil if you keep on sinning, there's a couple different ways to look at it. One of them is this, that you have fallen into the trap of the enemy. That he brings offense, he brings sin, and you start it and you can't get out of the cycle. You just keep rolling along. And he says, look what you've done. You've fallen right into his trap. He says, but the Son of God, Jesus, came to destroy the works of the devil. Jesus came to break the cycle of sin and offense. Those who have been born into God's family do not make it a practice of sinning because God's life is in them. So they can't keep on sinning because they're children of the God. Here's what he's saying. He's saying, if you're a true Christian, if you're serving God, then you're not going to keep on in the cycle. You will find a time, you will find a moment, you will find the ability to break the cycle of sin and offense. And it's up to you to do it. Look, we've got to be mature and learn to break the cycle. I know that's hard. I've been hurt before. I've been offended before. Plenty of times. There's been plenty of times in church I've said stuff or done stuff or made a decision and people get offended. And let me tell you something. They love to tell their pastor they're offended at him. And so they will let me know. And so they'll say, hey, you offended me. You made me mad. Well, you know what happens to me? Then I get offended and I'm mad at them. And then when I get up and preach, it's hard for me not to preach at them, right? Because I'm offended at you, Todd. And so now all of my sermon's going to be about... And so then they get offended again, and it comes right back. So one of us has got to be mature, and we've got to stop that cycle. So Jesus gives us a key here, how to break the cycle. And he says that love is what breaks the cycle. In Luke chapter 6, verses 27 through 29, it says this, but to you who are willing to listen, I say, love your enemies. Let me just stop right there. I say, love your enemies. You struggling with offense today? Do you feel like you're stuck in the offended cycle? Learn to love the people that have offended you. And here's the cool thing, is that he gives us the idea on how to do it. Because the love here is not a love of feeling. Can I tell you something? You will never feel like loving somebody that has offended you. When your wife makes you mad, you don't feel like loving her, right? When your teacher makes you mad, you don't feel like loving him. When your pastor makes you upset, you don't feel like loving him. You feel like slapping. Don't do it, though. I carry a gun. No, I'm just kidding. you're never going to feel like it. So Jesus says this. He says, look, this isn't a love that has to do with feelings. It's a love that has to do with action. Let me show you. Here's what he says. He says a couple of things. He says, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. When he says do good, this is action-based. What he's telling us here is he's saying you've got to physically go do something for the person that has offended you. You've got to find the person that you're upset at and do something good for them. I remember there's been times when people have really offended me, and it was very hard on me. You know what I did? I broke out the checkbook and I wrote a check to their ministry. And I thought, I don't want to do this, but if I'm going to break the cycle of offense, I need to do good for this person. There's times when people have offended me and I've turned around and I've served them and I've helped them and I've gone the extra mile for them because he said to do good to those that have offended us. Verse 28, he says, bless those that curse you. The word bless means to speak well of. So if I'm going to bless somebody, in the Bible, the father would bless the children, right? He would give a blessing to the children. I preached a couple weeks ago about Jacob and Esau and how Jacob stole Esau's blessing and Esau got offended, right? And so the reason he got offended is because the blessing meant something. Whenever the father would put his hands on the child and he would bless him, he would speak things over them like, you're going to be in charge. You're going to be the head and not the tail. You're going to be the best and not the worst. I mean, he would speak good things over them. Whenever we get offended, we need to learn to speak good things over people. I've told you before about a guy I worked for one time that offended me very much. A pastor offended me, and I left that church. And whenever I left that church, I got a visit not long afterwards from a member of that church. Came to my town and wanted to come hang out with me. They hadn't seen me in a while, and so we were all hanging out. And that person began to say bad things about that pastor. And it would have been very easy for me to just jump right on board because I was already offended. It would have been very easy for me to jump on board and say, yeah, that pastor's a jerk, man. You should leave that church. But instead, I said, you know what? He's got a lot of good qualities. Here's a couple of things that he does do well. And you don't need to leave unless God tells you to leave. And I begin to speak well of that pastor. And it almost hurt for me to do. I'm going to be honest with you. It didn't feel good. I'm not getting up here today telling you that if you're going to break the cycle, it's going to be easy. It's not easy. And you'll fail a lot. But if you learn to make that a habit in your life. The other thing he says is, he says, pray for those who hurt you. Not only do we need to speak well of them and to them, we need to speak to God for them. When I've been offended by people, this is the one I really take to heart. And I begin to pray for people. And I just begin to pray that God will bless them. I begin to pray that God would use them. I begin to pray that God would speak to them. And I want to pray, God, smite them with 1,000, you know, flies or whatever. You know, I want to say, send the plagues on them. But instead, I find myself praying, God, I just pray that you would multiply them, and you would prosper them, and you would use them to reach the lost. And I begin to pray things over them that I would want someone to pray over me. And I find that whenever I begin to pray for people, it begins to change my heart. I begin to break the cycle. The last thing he says is, he says, if someone slaps you on one cheek, offer or turn the other cheek. How many of you heard that before? We've all heard that. How many of you ever done that before? Yeah, not as many hands. One person. I'm about to close. Because the fact is, this one right here is the one I never want to do. Because I go to God and I'm like, God, I'm going to tell you right now, if someone comes and slaps me on my cheek, I'm slapping them back. Like, I'm not turning my other cheek. Like, it's a fight. And I started doing the research, and I found out that the slap on the cheek has nothing to do with violence. It wasn't I'm trying to start a fight with you, because I believe that if someone's trying to punch you out, that God will allow you to defend yourself. I mean, that's okay. Jesus said there's a time for swords. I mean, there's a time when you defend yourself. But as I researched this, I realized that the slap on the cheek was really an insult. that if I were to walk up to you, it's really coming from a heart of offense. So basically, you've offended me, and I see you on the street, and I walk up to you, and I slap you in the face. It's like the old cartoons where they take the glove out and they smack them on the face. It's an insult to that person. And so it wasn't a matter of they're trying to fight me. They're insulting me. So Jesus says, look, even if they come up to you in the street and they publicly insult you and humiliate you in front of all your friends, turn the other cheek. Like, go on and slap that one too, because I'm not doing anything back. Why did he say that? Because he's saying you got to learn to break the cycle. Love breaks the cycle of offense. And we've got to learn to do that. Here's my final thought today, and then we're going to pray, and then we'll have a really interesting, fun time. The last thing is this. Forgiven people forgive people. Forgiven people forgive people. Here's the key today. If you don't get anything else, you've got to learn to forgive other people. And here's the reason. Because He forgave you. He forgave you. And what you did to Him was far worse than what anybody has ever done to you. Because we rejected Him because of us, because of our sin. He had to die on a cross. Ain't nobody dying in here for you today. He had to die on a cross. And He forgave us. Luke 6:31, the next verse down, it says, do unto others as you would like them to do to you. If you want to be forgiven, you've got to learn to forgive others. Ephesians chapter 4, my last verse today. Verse 31 and 32 says, get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, harsh words, slander, as well as all types of evil behavior. What is he saying? He's saying, stop being offended by everything. Stop watching the news and getting offended. Stop talking to your neighbor and getting offended. Stop looking at what your wife's not doing and getting offended. Stop looking at what your husband's not doing and getting offended. Don't be offended. Instead, be kind to each other, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. How? Just as God, through Christ, has forgiven you. Jesus had to make a sacrifice to forgive us. We're going to have to make a sacrifice sometimes to forgive others. But when we learn to forgive others, we remove the wedge of offense, and we stop the chain.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. For more info about Gateway Family, visit our website, gatewayfamily.cc.